Welcome into Opportunity Detroit. I'm Ann Thomas, and on this edition of the show, the Detroit Opera has a new chorus director and music administrator. You'll meet Catherine Kozak. Detroit Pal's great story in Detroit has gotten even better. CEO Fred Hunter will stop by with the details. And speaking of great stories, Christian Greer, the president and CEO of the Michigan Science Center, will be in to talk about teaching science and making learning fun for the whole family. A great story about what's happening in and around the D right after these messages. Welcome into Opportunity Detroit. I'm Ann Thomas. We kick off today's show with Catherine Kozak. She is the new chorus director and music administrator for the Detroit Opera. Catherine, welcome to Detroit.
Thank you so much, Anne. I'm excited to move to Detroit.
So where are you coming from? Tell us a little bit about your career, Catherine.
Yes, well, currently I'm living in Phoenix, Arizona, and I am working at Arizona right now as the head of music, chorus director, and principal coach of the Pullen Opera Studio. And this is a position I've held here since 2022.
Okay, so I want to warn you that when you come here, you're going to need several coats.
Well, you know, Anne, I shall be prepared for that because I was born and raised in Cleveland.
Okay.
And even though I was born and raised in Cleveland, you know, I never made it to Detroit. So I am looking forward to having four seasons once again.
Absolutely. You're in for a real treat. Talk about your career and how you got into music.
I started learning piano when I was 6 years old. And at age 11, I started playing for a children's chorus in Cleveland, Ohio called the Singing Angels. And I played for them from age 11 through the end of high school. I then went on to college and got a degree in piano performance and pedagogy from Ohio University. Therefore, went straight on to graduate school at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign and obtained my master's degree in vocal coaching and accompanying. After graduate school, I spent about 20 years working professionally as a coach and pianist around the country. After that, I transitioned to being an opera chorus director. And since that transition, I've been the chorus director at Florida Grand Opera, Arizona Opera, where I am currently, and also currently in the summertime, I'm the chorus director at the Glimmerglass Festival, which is based in Cooperstown, New York.
So obviously, you're no stranger to moving to different parts of the country. This is very exciting to have you coming here to Detroit. Talk about how you found out about this opportunity and why it's so appealing to you, Catherine.
First of all, Detroit Opera, which was formerly known as Michigan Opera Theater, and that's how the name I've known for many years, Detroit Opera has been an important part of the cultural landscape, not only in Michigan for the past 50 years or so, but it also has a stellar reputation nationally for producing and presenting opera at the highest caliber. So when I learned that this position was open, I applied immediately, not only for that reason, but also for the reason that Maestro Roberto Kalb, who is the music director there, he has a wonderful reputation. And actually, Maestro and I have worked together on several projects over the years, both in Miami and in Phoenix. And so combined with knowing that Maestro Kalb was there and also the exciting cultural landscape that Detroit is a part of, it made me very interested and excited to apply. Detroit Opera is a part of Detroit's most valuable asset, which is its culture.
Yes.
You know, the opera together with Motown, jazz, gospel, techno, the Fox Theater, the Detroit Symphony Orchestra, you know, is an important part of Detroit's creative economy. And did you know that the Detroit Opera House has the largest stage in Michigan?
I did not know that. That's interesting. That's pretty cool.
Yes.
It's a beautiful, beautiful building.
It is the fifth largest stage in the country.
Now, when you come here to Detroit, what are some of the first things that you're going to do?
Yes. So my role as chorus director there, I anticipate holding chorus auditions and filling out the chorus for our first two productions, which require a chorus, which is the double bill of Highways and Valleys, and also The Handmaid's Tale, which will be in the spring. Those two productions require choruses in them. So I will be holding auditions for those productions. And just digging in, getting my feet wet, learning what assistance I can provide to the orchestra librarian and to the orchestra manager and to Roberto Kalb, also as music director. I imagine very quickly after those auditions are held and cast, I will be having chorus rehearsals for our first production in December.
And you'll be working with the children too, correct?
It will be part of my job description going forward that, yes, I will be working with the children.
You know, Catherine, when you're part of an audition, what do you look for in a good opera singer that you would like to be part of your team?
When I listen to chorus auditions, I am listening, number one, beauty of tone. Does this person's voice have a beauty of tone and evenness throughout all of the registers, low, middle, high? The second thing I look for is this person artistically inclined? Are they telling a story in the aria or song that they are presenting? Do they enjoy being on stage? You know, you have to enjoy being on stage. You know, this is a very, you know, extroverted thing that singers have to do.
You're right.
So, yeah, a combination of those things, that's really what I'm listening for someone to be successful in an opera chorus.
Talk to us a little bit about this season. Describe what are some of the different performances that you personally are really looking forward to and are looking forward to working on?
As you may know, Detroit Opera's theme this season is America at 250. And as our nation celebrates the 250th anniversary of the Declaration of Independence, Detroit Opera presents works that explore American identity. So this season, there will be choruses in two out of the three productions. The first production is going to be Highways and Valleys, which is two American love stories. It is a double bill, which means that they are two one-act operas with an intermission in between. The first one-act opera is William Grant Still's Highway 1, USA. And the second act, or second opera, is Court Vile's Down in the Valley. This double bill opens on December 7th. And both of these composers sought out the heart of American folk music and brought it to the world of opera. Our audience will hear blues, romanticism, musical theater, American folk songs, and classical forms. And specifically, Highway 1 celebrates the Black experience and shows us how African-American culture is central to the sound of our national identity. Down in the Valley, which is our second one act, incorporates folk songs and traditional American songs to tell the story of a tragic romance. So there will be choruses in both of these one acts, and I'm excited. For me, these are pieces I've never done before, so I'm excited to dig in and learn the music for these two pieces. The second production that chorus will be involved in is The Handmaid's Tale, which opens on March 1st. And that is based on the novel by Margaret Atwood, with music by Paul Reuters and a libretto by Paul Bentley. Now, before Atwood's novel became a TV series, Paul Reuters composed this opera in 1998, and it had its premiere in the year 2000. And this music is vastly different from what we will hear in December. It is haunting. It is three-tonal. There is much repetitive chanting music from the women's chorus, which is the chorus of Handmaidens. So our audiences are going to hear our chorus do two very different styles in December and in March. And so those two pieces I'm very excited to get to work on. And for me, The Handmaid's Tale is new music also. I've never had the opportunity to work on that opera.
Yeah, that'll be really interesting to see in opera form, don't you think?
Absolutely.
Now, when you come to Detroit, I know you've probably, because you're basically from the Midwest, Cleveland, mm-hmm. you've heard lots mm-hmm. of things about the city. What are some of yep. the things that you would like to do that you plan to do when you get into town?
So I definitely plan on checking out the musical landscape there.
Yes.
Jazz, blues, gospel. I love to hear all different kinds of concerts and in a lot of different kinds of venues. Now, I know Detroit is a big sports town, but I'm going to be very honest with you. I don't really follow sports. I will tune in for the Super Bowl once a year, but that's mostly to watch the commercials and the halftime show. But I am excited to explore the musical landscape of Detroit. And also, I was raised Ukrainian and Polish American, and I know that Detroit has very strong communities, Eastern European communities, and I'm very excited to learn where the best Polish and Ukrainian food is in the city.
And you have to stop by the Motown Museum in Hittsville, USA, yes, because that is right up your alley with the beautiful music there. And all they've developed a huge campus there now, and it's really spectacular.
Oh, wonderful. Looking forward.
Now, on the sports front, because the Detroit Opera House is located directly across from Comerica Park, I think this will be a really good opportunity for you to learn all about the Detroit Tigers and baseball.
Yes, I can't see how I won't. Yes, I have to say, when I visited Detroit in May to have final interviews and have a working session with the chorus, I was absolutely astounded by the beauty of the building, but also that it looks right at Comerica Park.
I know, it's incredible. We've done several shows from there on opening day because of the fantastic location. I mean, it's a really, really beautiful gem right in the heart of the city of Detroit. Now, before I let you go, let's say we have parents, grandparents, and the audience who have little ones who clearly have a gift for music, for singing, or perhaps playing an instrument. What kind of advice do you have for them on how to get into music? You know, kind of teach them so they don't get turned off, but end up loving it like you clearly do.
Thank you. So, yes, so one of the reasons why I do what I do is because, as I mentioned at the beginning of our interview, at age 11, I started playing for a chorus,
right,
and that made it a more social activity. As you know, playing an instrument, especially piano, can be a very solitary activity. So I would say if any parent has a child that shows any kind of interest in music or theater, make sure that child has a group activity and they're not taking lessons just on their own. It is one thing to practice on your own and get better at your technique and understand what you're doing, but really, the thing that made me love it even more was that it was a group activity. And Detroit Opera does have a children's chorus. And to my understanding, they meet several times a month. And they rehearse and they teach them basics of music. And even though someone's child may be playing an instrument, they would still benefit from being in a singing group like we have at Detroit Opera. Again, underlining, making it a social and group activity will just highlight the child's love for music.
Oh, I think you're absolutely right about that. My daughter, Veronica, was in the Detroit Opera's first children's chorus, and she absolutely loved it. It was a wonderful experience for her. So it's really a good idea. Great advice. Catherine Kozak, the new chorus director and music administrator for the Detroit Opera, thank you for talking to us today. Congratulations on the new position, and welcome to the Motor City.
Thank you, Anne. It's been a pleasure.
Coming up next on Opportunity Detroit, more good news for Detroit PAL and the city of Detroit. You are listening to Opportunity Detroit. Detroit PAL, a longtime nonprofit operating in the city of Detroit, is celebrating a major milestone with the grand opening of a new recreation center. Fred Hunter, Detroit PAL CEO, thank you for joining us today to talk about this.
Thank you, Anne. Glad to be on the show.
So I heard you talking to Paul W. the other day, and I thought to myself, oh, this is a great story for Opportunity Detroit, Fred. Talk a little bit about this new facility, where it is, what it is, how it's going to work.
Yeah, it is located in southwest Detroit near Livernois and McGraw, and it's a renovated recreation center, the Powell Recreation Center. And, you know, what it is for us is another facility. We're so thankful to have the corner ballpark where our headquarters and our offices are, and we've got the great field in the back. But the recreation center provides things that we don't have activated. It has a full gymnasium. It's got a wonderful workout facility provided by Planet Fitness, and it's got classrooms and e-gaming opportunities downstairs for kids, and also cafeteria multi-purpose rooms for our coaches and parents as well. So it gives us a full range of opportunities as an organization.
What made you decide to do this, Fred?
Yeah, we've been fortunate to program out of the space for many years, but we had challenges in terms of what we could do. A lot stemmed on the age of the building. So it's a 76-year-old facility, and the boiler in there was the original boiler. So we had only two different temperatures. It was either off or it was 100 degrees. And when you think about beautiful Michigan summers, but it does get hot. Especially in gymnasiums, and then the challenges just during the winter with different things. So for us, it was a great building, but it needed the renovation to be able to be consistent and something that could be the proper level of excellence for us, for the kids and the families we serve.
And did you have a lot of support from the community in order to be able to do this?
We did. Everyone was excited because it's the old St. Andrew's School. So even the St. Andrew's Gymnasium is on the facility. So it has a lot of history, you know, in the neighborhood. And we were very intentional. We got Kresge had a Kip D grant, which was an opportunity for us to explore what it would take to renovate the facility. So we were purposeful of getting input from community members. What's nice, it's in a location where a lot of other strong nonprofits in Detroit are headquartered. You have Brilliant Detroit, you have Matrix Human Services, you have Starfish right there. So we're able to get input from other nonprofits, input from the community members in terms of what this could look like. And we use that in our plans for our renovation.
Tell our listeners about PAL. I know we here at WJR have talked about Detroit PAL, the Detroit Police Athletic League, for years and years, starting with J.P. McCarthy, and then Paul W. Smith and his wife Kim were very, very involved for many, many years. But maybe there's people out there that don't know anything about Detroit PAL, so kind of start from the very beginning.
Yeah, Detroit PAL started in 1969, and if you consider where things were in the city of Detroit between law enforcement and the community, there was a huge gap from 1967 in terms of what we saw. So the police department had the idea of let's start an organization focused on building the bridge with the community, and let's focus on kids. And it started off as police and youth and sports, but then they took the national name. But it was born in Detroit by Detroit Police Department. And for 56 years, we've had that strong relationship with DPD. And our motto is reaching young people however we can. Sports is the primary focus we do. So we've got 12 different athletic programs. We're building resilience and goal setting and leadership and discipline in kids. But we also have a variety of enrichment programs, doing leadership development, empowering, literacy, STEAM programs. And then that connection with the police is also a key part of what we do. So we serve now over 9,000 kids per year with the help of over 1,000 volunteers every year. And we're impacting the city, uplifting kids, and raising up Detroit.
And that keeps kids out of trouble, frankly, right, Fred?
It does. It provides positive options. Kids are going to get activated in something. And when you've got sports and you've got the things that you can learn from sports, which gives you life principles and life lessons, and you're learning those in terms of teamwork and responsibility, so that gets them engaged in something positive. And what's also important about our motto is the coaches and the volunteers. We actually have a required training for all of our volunteers. So 1,000-plus volunteers come in and trained on youth development principles, how to best interact with the child so that they're teaching the principles, speaking life and confidence and belief in kids. And it really has an impact. We can see generationally, you know, what children who are now adults bringing their children into the program, what they got out of the program, they're continuing to do now with their own children.
Are there certain requirements for the kids in order for them to be involved in this program?
There's no requirements outside of our ages. We have we start at age 4, and we go all the way up to age 18 for some of our programs. Most of our programming happens in Detroit, but we don't have a residency requirement. And what we see now is about 20% of our kids come from outside of Detroit, Wayne County, Macomb County, Oakland County. So it's open for all. We keep pricing very affordable. So you'll see, even for instance, our hockey program, including the equipment and everything that comes with that, is only $100. So we want to make sure it's affordable. We do have some free options, but we are open to the community and looking to grow so more kids can have the opportunities of what we provide.
And at some point along the way, Fred Hunter, there was a merger of sorts with Think Detroit. Talk about that.
Yes, PAL has a storied history going back to 1969, and in 1997, two UD Jesuit graduates came together with an idea called Think Detroit. That program started in 97, and it grew from 97 to 2005 to about 5,000 youth. So you had two great nonprofits serving kids in sports, and they made a decision with their boards to let's be stronger together. So Think Detroit, Detroit PAL merged to become Think Detroit PAL, and that one organization from April 1st, 2006 has continued to this day. We changed the name in 2013 to Detroit PAL, so it has that historical name, but those two strong organizations are now one, and we're just continuing to reach out to the community and impact kids.
We're talking to Fred Hunter. He is the CEO of Detroit PAL. And Fred, I have a feeling that you have some great stories about some of the kids that have come out of this program and actually gone on to be pretty darn successful.
We do, and it's a great perspective. I've been with the organization 25 years, and
wow.
You know, one story in particular I remember is my second year, there was an eighth grade student. He was on the underdog basketball team, and they ended up winning the championship in 2002, and then I could see fast forward later, he became a Detroit police officer. He was assigned at Detroit PAL, and presently he is Sergeant Bryant George, who is overseeing the three officers that we have here and connecting us with the community. And what's very impactful about the story is the relationship he had with the coaches and the team. One, there was a police mentor that impacted him. But two, it gave him that engagement away from the challenges he had in his community. He lived right next to a drug house. Unfortunately, his brother took a different path and died from gun violence. So to know what an organization like Detroit PAL can give to kids, and to see him now impacting literally thousands of kids with his presence with the DPD and with the organization, it's one of those stories that captures what Detroit PAL can do.
And it is a really great story because it talks about the value of community policing. And as you know, community policing is a whole conversation nowadays across the country and how it really, really works.
Yeah, police officers take a pledge to serve and protect, and so many times you see the enforcement side, but community policing is being able to be proactive, involved in the community, having good relationships with children, with parents, with volunteers, and that's what we're able to do with Detroit PAL and connect other officers into that community policing. So one of the big things that we see as an outcome is a positive view of law enforcement from the community. But it's also important for police officers because they're now able to be engaged in a positive way, shaping and helping the community they serve in. So it's very important to us, very important to the Detroit Police Department as well.
And another great part of this story is the fact that you, Fred Hunter, have been with PAL, Detroit PAL, for 25 years. What a great career. Talk about yourself a little bit. I know you don't like to do that, but you are a very important part of this organization.
Yeah, I'm very thankful that the two co-founders of Think Detroit reached out to me. They were classmates of mine, and it was just the perfect fit for me. You know, right since high school, I worked as a play leader for the city of Detroit, so I knew that kids and uplifting kids was part of how I'm wired. And to have the opportunity to be with the organization, to grow, and to see the many things that we're able to accomplish is something that's very special to me. Athletics was a key part of my development. I had the opportunity to play three sports in high school and played a couple of years of basketball at University of Michigan. Actually, was a senior when the Fab Five were freshmen. So I could see what sports can do, not only for opportunities, but also shaping. And now to be in a position where I can help shape this next generation through sports, through coaching, it's something that I'm more excited about now, even 25 years into what I do.
Oh, such a great story. Now, talk about how we can help you, how listeners can help you. What do you need? Where do you go to volunteer?
Yeah, Detroit PAL is a mission-based organization, so we are on the ground doing all the things that it needs to take, and we need supporters to really come alongside us and help our mission. You know, we have volunteer opportunities in terms of leaning in from there, but it's also important for financial contributions and, you know, simple things like paying, dollars a month, $5 or $10 a month to us. That makes a difference when we get a lot of people doing that. So financially supporting our work in the city, filling gaps to uplift kids is one of the best ways that anyone can be a part of the good work happening in Detroit.
And Fred, we want to let our listeners know, for more information on how to get involved, you go to DetroitPAL.org. Fred Hunter, Detroit PAL CEO, thank you for joining us today to talk about the new Recreation Center and all of the wonderful work that you continue to do in the city of Detroit.
Thank you, Ann. Really appreciate the opportunity.
Coming up next on Opportunity Detroit, everything you need to know to visit the Michigan Science Center this fall. Listening to Opportunity Detroit. I'm a big fan of the Michigan Science Center and its president and CEO, Christian Greer. So I thought it would be a good idea here on Opportunity Detroit today to check in with Christian and just see how the summer's been and what we can expect for the fall. Christian, welcome to the show.
And it's great to be with you.
So I know you've got a lot going on. You probably had a fabulous summer at the Michigan Science Center. But now that the kids are going back to school, what can we expect to see at the Michigan Science Center this fall?
Well, you know, my own kids had a little bit of a problem transitioning from summer to fall and getting back into the swing of things for school. We all remember that, right?
Yes. Going through.
So we want to keep the excitement going at the Michigan Science Center. And there's at the Michigan Science Center, there's a lot going on. And we're really buzzing with new projects and experiences for families, especially with young children. And the first thing I think I want to mention is our planetarium. You know, you may have seen in other reports about the planetarium undergoing a renovation as part of a larger initiative called our Hyperspace Initiative. And it's really all about adding more space science content to our already rich opportunities and activities at the Science Center, but particularly centered around a renovation for our planetarium. This is a multi-million dollar project that's been going on for a little while, but we just shut the planetarium down a few weeks ago, and now the dome panels have been removed. We're putting in a new nanoseam dome. We're adding an 8K 10 projector system that includes something called Digistar, which is sort of a very complex, very capable software system that takes real data from NASA and other sources and puts it in the planetarium. So you're flying through the universe as we know it, as scientists and astronomers see it. So we're excited about that, which will be fun. Our new show will be called Hyperspace, A Stellar Odyssey, and it's all about how stars evolve and how they grow and what happens as they die and throw off those layers of atmosphere and even become black holes. And people are fascinated by this stuff, so we're excited to do that for sure.
Well, you're right about that. People love anything associated with space. So this is a great idea because you can go to this and you can learn, but you can have fun too.
Absolutely. And we're hoping to try to make the show a little bit more dynamic and interactive. You know, people get a lot of their space science and science content from digital media, and we want to sort of build off of that rather than compete against it, because all these things are already in your mind. It's called, from an educator's perspective, it would be called prior knowledge. And you want to, as a teacher, tap into that prior knowledge because it's something to stand on, something to connect with. And then it becomes more meaningful and more memorable when people can connect it with things that they know. But there are also a lot of misconceptions out there about space, how vast it is, what's out there, what you can see at night, just right here from Detroit. And there's a lot to see. So we're hoping to reopen the planetarium for the holidays. So we haven't identified a specific date yet, but it'll be around the holidays to prototype some new things and people get a chance to see it.
Oh, that's going to be great. Now, you have an interesting educator night coming up in September. This is a really good idea. It's for teachers, right?
It's for teachers. This is a fascinating and fun way to really connect with teachers and kind of have an open house on the Detroit cultural district campus in our district. And so lots of museums and universities are participating in this. And we just want to be able to provide something that gives educators an opportunity to kind of go behind the scenes and see what we do at the Michigan Science Center. As you know, if you look on the side of our building, especially if you come down Warren towards John R. and Wayne State, you'll see the Science Center, a big banner on the side that says, "We put you at the center of science." And that is really our mantra and our value proposition. And part of our brand essence is we want people to feel like they are empowered to do science for themselves. You know, 400 years ago, Galileo looked up at the sky with his telescope and got into a lot of trouble. But it was because he saw things happening that were different than sort of the prevailing knowledge at the time and understanding when he watched the moons of Jupiter go around. And this is something you can actually see with a regular telescope in your backyard over the course of the night. You can actually watch the moons move. Can you imagine seeing that 400 years ago? And no one had ever seen it before.
That's
and
incredible.
So these are the kinds of things that we want people to have, like be your own Galileo. And as I mentioned Galileo, I'd like to talk about something associated with the Renaissance too, which is we've got a Leonardo da Vinci exhibit coming.
This sounds really cool, by the way.
Yes. It's called Machines in Motion. And we're thrilled to announce that this next big exhibit, which is a traveling exhibit that will be on our fourth floor, it comes from the same company, Evergreen Exhibitions, that brought us from the Australian Museum, the Tyrannosaurs exhibit, which is extended. That was only supposed to be here for 3 months. It's been a year. Mm-hmm. It's been so popular with Tyrannosaurs. Everybody loves dinosaurs, right?
They do.
But Leonardo da Vinci is a special person. And we want young people to see themselves as sort of Renaissance kids, you know, like they could do art and music and sing and dance and draw and do science. And in math and engineering and technology, because the affordances that this generation has with all the technology is available in the palm of their hand. We gotta figure out a way to superpower this, you know, and give them a chance to explore. So that'll be coming this fall.
And a lot of people may not realize, Christian, that Da Vinci painted a lot of machines.
Oh, yes. And, you know, it's interesting because, you know how we have ideas? You'll be in the shower and you're like, you know what? I think this is an easier way to hang up, you know, towels or, you know. And the difference is that we don't actually write these things down. We don't have notebooks. We don't take the time to figure this out. And we should. And I know we're busy professionals and we've got a lot going on with kids with school. But I think if you just make it a point to just take a few napkins and a pen and just sketch something out, you never know what could come of that. And I think doing that helps you understand a little bit more about how you visualize information, how you process it, the way you think, and really the translation that comes from an idea in your head to something on paper to something in reality. And this is how startups are created, how innovation happens. You know, Lois Schumpeter, who I think coined the term innovation maybe in the 30s, he had this idea of creative destruction. And I thought this is such a great way to think about it. You know, this idea that our new ideas kind of subtly destroy the old ones as we accept better ways or more optimized ways of doing things. And we want kids to be able to be inspired by Da Vinci to do it.
You've also got an interesting relationship, partnership with Michigan Central. Talk about this.
Yes, Michigan Central is such a great place. We've been out there actually several times this summer for a variety of events, and they have a new program called Kaleidoscopic Home, and it's now through September 21st, which is just a month away. And educators are part of this amazing installation called Kaleidoscopic Home, and it's created from some Australian artists who were really trying to imagine things regarding augmented reality and sculpture and movement and joy together in a sensory playscape for all ages. So what you can imagine is sort of a mashup of lots of different technologies and techniques that really captivate your senses of touch, of sight, and sound. And we think that's really the best way to learn. I'm inspired by what the artists did to create this. It'll be at Michigan Central, and we're one of the partners helping to activate this space with lots of other sort of supporting activities that just extend the learning.
You know what I really enjoy hearing about from you, Christian Greer, President and CEO of the Michigan Science Center, is how creative you are to get kids to learn.
Yes. Yes. You know, it takes a little time in some ways. You think it's complicated, and then in other ways it's easy. You know, I once had an educator that worked for me, and this guy just had rapport. Like, he could come into a room, and for whatever reason, like, I'm standing there next to him, and I'm thinking, I said the exact same thing 5 minutes ago. But I think you have to develop a kind of rapport with kids. And and if you get in their own minds, I think about this with my own kids. I'm like, what are you guys talking about? I'm not that much older than you, but I guess I am. And so I recognize that I think getting down on their level, playing the way they want to play, hanging out with them and trying to get a feel for how they dream and wonder and learn, and remembering that for ourselves, because it's, you know, sometimes it gets, you know, drawn out of us at times, but a lot of times we second guess ourselves about what we can vision. And, you know, our Kids Town, if I may just quickly mention this, we have what is the equivalent of like a miniature children's museum at the Science Center. It's on our lower level. It's called Kids Town. It was reopened just recently, earlier this year, and we're reimagining it. It's a great place in which we're inspired by Montessori practices and Reggio Emilia, ways that allow kids to kind of learn on their own for themselves, take out their own work, but also infuse the arts into science. So it's a real nice STEM education with the A, STEAM, center for everyone. And so it's just like you said, and it's, we're trying to relate to these young people and give them what we've learned as adults, but let them expand and create new ways of solving some of our problems in through innovation and exploration.
Well, Christian Greer, it's always great to check in with you. Thank you so much for the time today.
It was great being on your show.
And I'm Ann Thomas. Thanks for listening to Opportunity Detroit. Enjoy the rest of your day.